the mighty Prosoro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quantity and higher yield, use Prosoro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosoro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Thank you. Welcome back. Farm Talk on the road today here at the Dirt Workshop in Fargo. If it comes around again next year, we'll be here. It's going to be a lot of people are learning a lot. From the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, Paul Yassa joins us now. Hello, Paul.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Yes, and you have been since the late 70s, you've been working no-till in Nebraska.
That's right. I'm an engineer by background and training, and I thought no-till was simply parking the tillage tools, hook it on the planter, go out and plant the crop.
And, that's the way to go. Don't disturb the soil, right?
Don't disturb the soil is the right way, but I learned in a hurry that engineers don't know a lot about soil and crop responses, things like that. So mine's been a learning experience ever since.
What was the first thing you changed about that attitude?
Well, the first thing was I learned never let weeds get ahead of you. If there was a failure in the early days of no-till, the weeds took over the crop and you didn't have a yield. So I learned I had to manage the weeds, had to manage fertility, and had to manage everything agronomically that an engineer never took those classes.
How about in the areas this year in Nebraska where they got a lot of headlines back in March, but it wasn't the whole state. There was a lot of soil that was severely compromised that maybe needed a little tillage to get back into shape?
It's quite true. I like no-till what it does for the soil. Mother Nature doesn't always do what we want it to do. We had some flooding that had severe cutting and gullying in some fields, and other fields it deposited layers of thick silt and sand or trees and debris. And so, yeah, tillage might be necessary to clean that up. The quickest thing, though, is once you get that cleaned up and back into shape, get a living root in there to recover that soil.
What people were asking me about, hey, what are those farmers in Nebraska going to do with all of that silt and sand on their soil? And I didn't have a good answer because I don't know. What are they going to do?
Well, some of them stockpiled it off the side of the field, and we have a lot of center pivot irrigation. And, again, you didn't want a big pile where the pivot was going to run, so they definitely had to get moved all the way to the corners. Some guys got real ambitious, started talking to some local contractors. They need sand for a fill project or something like that. The unfortunate thing is that market got saturated in a hell of a hurry, and there was just no place to go with it.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought, well, push it back in the gully that was formed. Well, sand washes right back out. So a lot of times it was just spread it as thin as you can and maybe till it to incorporate it in your soil and just hope you could come out of it.
Conventional till, like what happens here in the heart of the Red River Valley where we have corn, beans, sugar beets, potatoes, and then Grandpa, the moldboard plow, and then the other end of the extreme, the no-tillers came along, and now there's a whole bunch of options in between. Are there strip-till and minimum-till and a lot of variety of in-betweeners there?
There's a lot of variety, and one of the main challenges I have in my educational program is overcoming tradition. If you're going to try adopting a new idea, it's nice to adopt new ideas, but in the back of your mind, it's admitting you were doing it wrong in the past, or maybe Grandpa did or Dad did. It's not they did it wrong, they did it with the best technology they had at the time. And so as new things discovered, we have to figure out agronomically, economically, is this thing the thing to do? The thing I tell people about no-till is Mother Nature never tilled the soil. Mother Nature always grew something. Maybe we should think that way too when it comes to our crop production.
How about strip-till, which seems to be working for a few?
The strip-till to me is an excellent transition tool from full-width tillage to a no-till system. But it also solves multiple problems. There's the advantage of fertilizer placement right below the row. There's advantage of a wet soil to dry it out a little bit. There's advantage of a compacted soil to open up the compaction. But unless you know what reason you're doing the strip-till for, you don't know which tool to buy. To clear the residue and warm the soil, I might need to only run 2 inches deep, and I could run with 5 horsepower per row. To place nutrients, I might go 8 inches deep and need 10 horsepower per row. To get rid of compaction, I might go 20 inches deep and make 50 horsepower per row. So again, which one do you buy? Why are you doing it?
What other options do you see happening in the future for farmers when it comes to till or no-till or somewhere in between?
Well, there's a lot of new thinking on there, how to get crops established. But the one that's catching my eye the most is, why do we do a single crop at one time? There's a lot of companion crop work doing now. Grow two crops and separate them after harvest, or grow two crops that have completely different harvest periods. Maybe it's a cash crop that comes off early, and then the crop underneath grows on later to be harvested maybe by livestock, maybe on a forage harvester. But again, why use that 1 acre only one time in a year? Maybe we need to look at having a living root more year-round and growing more. Mother Nature never grew just one thing at a time in one place.
Yeah. Intercropping is the term that applies to that. Who's doing what in Nebraska?
In Nebraska, we got a lot of guys that are starting their cover crops before their cash crop was harvested. And in particular, we got a lot of seed corn production. Seed corn is a high-value crop that's over-fertilized, over-watered, because you got a high-value seed you're trying to raise. Well, let's put a cover crop out there before harvest to use up the excess water, use up the excess nitrogen to help protect the environment, and then grow something there for your livestock to graze, because they're going to be grazing the downed corn in the seed corn production anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we're using the double duty off that same acre.
All right. Yeah. And now, what are you telling the folks here? What are you presenting here?
I'm, again, with my background and working with equipment, I'm talking more about what does it take for getting the seed in the ground, getting up and growing, whether it be a planter, a drill, an air seeder. But we got to think about what are we doing, why are we doing it, and worse than that, when we hear of an interview on your station or if we read something in a farm magazine, why are they doing what they're doing? Uh-huh. Too often in a farm magazine, we skip over that first paragraph that said this was Jim Brown in Ohio. Uh-huh. Well, Ohio's rainfall is completely different here than the Dakotas. I'm going to do things different here. We got to go back to that first paragraph and figure out why, who's doing what, and why you shouldn't be, perhaps.
And that's an excellent point. Why shouldn't I, of course, the obvious statement is, why should I modify what I'm doing now? But maybe why should, maybe, you know, if something's worked for me, something worked for Dad, and obviously Dad is going to complain if I'm going to change the farm, what's the process to make things better and make everybody happy?
Well, that's just it. Like I said earlier, that's one of our biggest challenges is tradition. Uh-huh. What we've been doing in the past, we know works. That's why we've been doing it. But there's some people say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting different results.
Right.
When you do that, it's no longer you're not making a choice. You've already made the choice. You're just doing the same thing over again. And that's where you got to be on the cutting edge and trying some new things. And maybe that producer in Ohio has some great idea. You just got to modify it for the Dakotas. And when we start doing that, there's some risk involved, but as a good friend of mine says, if you don't fail once in a while, you're not pushing the system hard enough, and you're not going to take advantage of the good years. If you are playing it safe all the time, that's all you ever do is play it safe.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent point, because a lot of farmers learned a lot this year with some of the challenges that they've had.
The challenges, I always like to call those learning experiences, and I actually have a note up on my bulletin board and says, oh no, another learning experience. And unfortunately, when you have those challenges, if you don't learn something, you wasted an opportunity. You have to figure out what happened, why it happened, how did you react, did what you did in the previous, did it survive? And that's the kind of thing that you have to do some independent thinking now. And it's no longer, Dad did it this way and it worked for 50 years. Well, Dad forgot to tell you it failed 10 years of those 50, perhaps.
Yeah. Alrighty. Paul Yassa, University of Nebraska, Lincoln, a no-till specialist here at the Dirt Workshop. And I'm looking for, is Yvonne, do you see Yvonne around here? I don't see Yvonne. What we're going to do, Paul, is let's take a quick break, and you and I can finish our conversation here if you just stay put for a bit.
All right.
All righty. We are here at the Dakota Innovation Research Technology Workshop in Fargo, and the Soil Sense star, Tim Hammerich, is going to be on the radio here in a little bit. So, but we're going to be right back with Paul and talk about no-till in Nebraska right after this on Farm Talk.
Hi, I'm Carl Peterson with Peterson Farm Seed, where I am proud to say we're a test it three times before we recommend it once kind of seed company. And we're a do everything it takes to help our farmers raise more bushels kind of a seed company. We're a keep the best, let the others sell the rest kind of seed company. And if you get why all this matters, then you're our kind of farmer. Peterson Farm Seed, we're that kind of seed company.
A little lower, lower. Right here. Right over my wheat field. Perfect.
You sure?
Yeah. Hold steady while I aim.
Aim? Is that a rocket launcher?
Yep. Guy at the surplus said it'll kill all the weeds.
You just blew up my truck!
Oh, sorry about that.
There's a simpler way to protect your spring wheat. Use Perfect Match Herbicide for the broadest spectrum of broadleaf weed and grass control in a single product. Learn more at simpleweedcontrol.com. Always read and follow label directions.
All right, back at the Dakota Innovation Research Technology Conference, the DIRT Workshop. Paul Yessa, University of Nebraska-Lincoln. You're supposed to be leading a discussion group here, so thanks for hanging out with us for a few more minutes. You talked about farmers buy a lot of add-ons, attachments from their short line dealer, which is maybe their neighbor, but everything a farmer does affects the next step is one of the points you're trying to get everybody to learn today.
It's quite true, and it's just like I said earlier, we don't do something just because somebody in Ohio did it. But what we need to do is, if we have a problem, let's look at what that short line dealer has to sell, what even a major company has to sell. What was it invented for? What problem is it trying to solve? Is that the problem you have? And too many people out there are buying these attachments thinking it's going to be a magic silver bullet to solve all problems. Turns out a lot of times it's a Band-Aid. It's to solve a problem they didn't take care of elsewhere. And a prime example is on planting equipment. I got a lot of farmers say, what residue mover do I need to kick residue out of my way? And I ask them, did they spread the residue at harvest back at the combine? I would rather spend a few hundred dollars to improve the spread behind the combine than save a few thousand dollars not buying the attachment for the planter. And a lot of people say, well, it's not quite that simple. And I says, well, if you think ahead and plan ahead, it becomes a lot simpler.
So what would be the solution there? Get that residue in more finer state so it breaks down quicker? Or
in the early days of no-till where you don't have soil biology working for you, yes, the finer, the better. For me, I've been a no-till so long, the coarser, the better, so it doesn't break down too fast. But the main thing is, here in the plains, the wind blows. I like to leave some residue standing upright, anchored, attached. Anything that's standing upright, anchored, attached will not move in the wind or, worse yet, with water. But the other thing is that standing up tall enough, it'll block the wind so it doesn't move the fine stuff. Mm-hmm. We get too many farmers who make some fine stuff. The next wind comes along, and now we've got a drift of residue that's a foot deep here and bare soil there. How do you equip the planter to handle a foot deep, and how do you protect the crop where there's no residue?
Yeah, residue drifts.
Oh, it does.
A new problem. All righty. Paul Yessa, University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Do you have like a section on your extension website there that a lot of your knowledge is?
I'm proud to say at University of Nebraska, years ago, we put together a website called CropWatch. That's one single word, just cropwatch.unl.edu. During the growing season, it's a crop production, crop scouting newsletter, tell you what's going on, well, at least in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is there's pull-down menus on the side. For instance, you can click on corn, nutrient management, nitrogen, and you can see all of our Nebraska recommendations.
All right, super. All right, well, thank you for all that, all those lessons learned, all those opportunities to learn from the years past. We'll tap into those. Appreciate it, Paul.
Thank you.
All righty.